With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
Final seconds. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
From the Quicken Loan Studios in Houston, Texas. Quicken Loans. Take advantage of historic low rates. Go to Rocket Mortgage today. Here's your host, 6'1", former Oklahoma Sooner basketball player, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Good evening and welcome inside the Quicken Loans Studios at the all-new SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell, and we are so glad you're along for the ride over the next 2 hours. You know what? We're going to pack our bags. It is time to head to Chicago. We're going to visit with one of our favorites. He is the CEO of Block 6 Analytics, and I know he is all smiles because his Chicago Cubs, they won the World Series. I'm talking about Adam Grossman. He is back with us on the Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. Good evening, Adam.
Good evening, Alyssa. That's quite a good introduction. You're exactly right. Everybody in Chicago is really happy with the Cubs, for sure.
Oh my gosh, what a celebration. And as I understand, it was estimated that 5 million people showed up to the Chicago Cubs parade and rally last Friday, making it the seventh largest gathering in human history. What was it like? You had to have been there.
Actually, I was traveling for work, but I definitely was. My girlfriend and I, we live right near Wrigley Field, so we were definitely tracking everything that was going on. And it's just amazing in terms of what people, you know, the smiles on people's faces, how many people are, how many horns are being honked. It seems like 5 million horns are being honked throughout the city. It's one of the rare occasions where, you know, regardless of age, race, demographic, you know, anything that you could think about, is there was unity around the Cubs winning and unity around the Cubs. You know, it's just the joy in terms of, it's really hard to think of another sporting event that brings so much joy to so many people in a city. And that's really what happened with the Chicago Cubs. And, you know, that story of the Cubs and the story of how, you know, families have lived, you know, generations have lived together, haven't seen the Cubs won, seeing the Cubs win, seeing, you know, great-grandfathers or great-grandmothers talking to their great-grandchildren and seeing the event in person. It's just, it's a unique thing that sports can do, and it's a unique way that people can celebrate the victories of their favorite team.
Absolutely. You know, fans connecting with their team. And obviously, you're talking about the excitement and the emotions. But you've been on our program many times. Is this what you predicted coming into the 2016 season? I know you're a genius, but were you spot on?
Well, I think the Cubs are definitely the favorite to win the World Series, given the amount of talent that they had. Now, just because you're the favorite to win doesn't mean you're actually going to win. In particular, when Kyle Schwarber got injured on the first day of the season, or one of the first days of the season, that really did seem to impact the Cubs' probability of winning. And as the season went on, obviously, the Cubs showed themselves to be the dominant team, or one of the most dominant teams in baseball. In fact, they're the most common analytics, you know, sports analytics that are used to measure player performance is called wins above replacement, or WAR. And the Cubs had by far the highest WAR in baseball as a team. So, you know, they had the best team. They arguably had the best manager. You know, it looked like everything was in place for them to win. But even going into, you know, the game five of the World Series, that looked like it wasn't going to happen. It looked like that Cleveland was going to win. They had, you know, the momentum. They had the advantage. It seemed like their pitching was really starting to click. They had dominant relievers. Their hitting was coming through when it seemed to be coming through. So, you know, I think, and we were talking a little bit before we came on the air about the election, you know, that's one of the things you have to see. Like, it's one thing to be favored to win. It's another thing for it actually to happen. So the Cubs, to their credit, made it happen in the most, you know, one of the most dramatic ways possible.
Well, and you know, Adam, there were so many fantastic moments from this World Series and this storybook ending. What was your favorite?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really is the family element of it. You know, it's to see people who have been Cubs fans their whole life and be 80 or 90 years old, and even people who are in their 60s and 70s and never even seen the Cubs in the World Series, the idea that they would get to the World Series seemed like it was out of reach for so many people for so long. And the idea of families across different generations being able to share that moment and share that joy, you know, that's something that has been a part of so many family legacies and so many family traditions. So I'd say, like, the family element on the Cubs itself, it really is, I think, the moment that sums up the entirety of the Cubs experience is the last out where Chris Bryant, you know, had the ball, the ground ball came to him, and he was smiling as he was throwing the ball, but he was also slipping. So it seemed like there could be some probability that he was not going to complete the throw, even though he was so happy that this seemed like the end of the game. So I think that if that doesn't sum up the Cubs, I guess in a nutshell, I'm not sure what else does.
You are listening to the familiar voice, the CEO of Block 6 Analytics. That, of course, is Adam Grossman, who's joining us tonight at the all-new SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Connect with us. Join us at Twitter, at eRadio Sports. You can go back and listen to our entire interview, our entire conversation at podcastarena.com. Check out the Big E Sports Show and all of our amazing hosts right here at our network. You know what's interesting? I wanted to open up our discussion tonight talking about your Chicago Cubs, because what perfect timing. I mean, you're going to be, what, releasing a book later or in the spring, as I understand, about Wrigley Field's role in transforming the Cubs brand into a winner, correct?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And it is very fortuitous timing. When I started writing the chapter for this book, which is, it's a part, basically the book is about the different stadiums and venues and different ballparks and how they function within a city in terms of how people identify and communicate around, you know, around the ballparks. And being in Chicago and living so close to Wrigley Field, you know, when I started writing this chapter, it was in 2014, before there were any real indications that the Cubs were going to be this close or this good. And obviously it's worked out very, very beneficially for me that they became this good. But what's really interesting, I think, about the Cubs story is the infrastructure that they put into place, both on and off the field. You know, they made strategic decisions to hire Theo Epstein, to rebuild their farm system, to draft players in a unique way. It wasn't the common conventional wisdom is that you can draft pitchers and find hitters potentially through free agency, and the Cubs took a different approach to that. And, you know, finding these young core of players and then hiring Joe Maddon and then building, you know, completing the renovation of Wrigley Field to make it, you know, to take something that's really been at the heart of the city and the heart of the narrative of the Cubs and keep all of the things that make it great while still improving the infrastructure and improving the clubhouse and making it more attractive for free agents to come to play in Chicago. So the combination of having everybody on the same page, having everybody on the same mission, and really moving from, you know, the Cubs had been known as the lovable losers for so long. And the Ricketts, to their credit, the Ricketts, who are the owners of the Cubs, or the majority owners of the Cubs, they made a decision to say, we can be lovable, but we don't have to be losers. We can be lovable winners. And they've really put that brand across the entire organization, and it's been reflective on the product both on and off the field. So it's really an interesting story, and it's really an interesting narrative that the Cubs have put together in such a short amount of time.
Well, it really is an inspirational story, and I'm so glad you bring up, Adam, the president of baseball operations, Theo Epstein. You know, can you provide some insight on just how effective he has been as a leader? We saw what he did with the Red Sox, but now the Chicago Cubs.
The best thing that he's done is create like a culture and a work ethic that is very hard to replicate. You know, people who work for Theo Epstein, generally speaking, are people who are going to work as many hours as it takes, as long as it takes, to find the right players, to make the right moves, to understand what's going to make the Cubs most likely, or whatever team he's working for, you know, whether it's the Red Sox or the Cubs, what's the most likely way that those teams will be successful. And his ability to, you know, again, make decisions that have driven success. And he, you know, he very much was in a place, given his success with the Red Sox, to have the credibility to say, you know, we're going to really rebuild this team, and it's going to take some amount of time to do that. But if we put in our system, if we put in our approach, if we put in the hours, then we're going to find the right players, make the right deals, and put the team in the best position to win. And then when a manager like Joe Maddon became available, you know, making that commitment to Joe Maddon early and quickly to make sure he was on the team is something that has really paid benefits. Now, I know some of the Cubs fans will say some of the decisions that Joe Maddon made during the World Series maybe weren't the best decisions they would make. But overall, you know, he has been the right manager for the right time and helped them be in the position where he could make some mistakes as a manager. But maybe made mistakes as a manager. But it's, you know, again, it's really the idea of Theo putting in the, you know, again, a great system that would put the Cubs in the best position to not only be winners now, but also be winners far into the future. In their infield, the oldest player in their infield is 27, and players in baseball typically reach their prime between age 26 and 27. And they have a great core of talent. It would be hard pressed to say a team that would be the favorite to win next year's World Series other than the Cubs as well.
Well, we talked about this last week. So what are your expectations, Adam? I mean, does he have a dynasty on his hand?
All indication, again, given everything that's happened in the last 48 hours, you know, making predictions can be tough. But the idea that the Cubs are, you know, they have a core group of talent. They also have, you know, Kyle Schwarber, who didn't even play the whole year, and people could see how talented he was as a hitter in the World Series. The idea that, you know, even him coming back is almost the equivalent of the Cubs signing a large free agent. So they'll have all of this talent. You know, most of this talent is coming back. There will be some players who are going to enter free agency, including Dexter Fowler and potentially some of the other players on the team who contributed to them winning. Kyle Hendricks being another one. But the idea of them, you know, they have Chris Bryant, they have Anthony Rizzo, they have John Lester. They have, you know, the people who have driven a lot of the success, and, you know, even Javier Baez, who struggled a little bit in the World Series but had a great playoff run. All of these players are under contract, and they're going to be only getting better, most likely, as they grow older for the next few years. So the Cubs are in a really good position to be really good for a really long time.
Hey, we're talking about his Chicago Cubs. That's right. The CEO of Block 6 Analytics, Adam Grossman, is with us tonight at SB Nation Radio. We've got to take a quick time out. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back to the all-new SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to continue our conversation with the CEO of Block 6 Analytics, Adam Grossman. How much are the Cubs spending to renovate Wrigley Field?
Well, it's an interesting question because it's not just that they're renovating Wrigley Field. They're also doing a lot of renovations outside of Wrigley Field in terms of they're building a new administrative offices near the field. They're helping to build hotels and restaurants in and around Wrigley Field. So they've done a lot of work both inside the field and outside the field. So it's going to be hundreds of millions of dollars in renovations. And what's interesting is the Cubs did try to push for some public financing of the renovations, but now they've decided to do it virtually entirely, if not entirely, by private funding. So the Cubs are committing hundreds of millions of dollars, and the Ricketts family are committing hundreds of millions of dollars to making these renovations. And there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. But so far, even with the new clubhouses and some of the changes that they've made, you know, there's been a lot of support and a lot of good feedback already. So there's definitely going to be some, you know, the construction will be difficult, and it's interesting to still play in a ballpark while you're renovating a ballpark, which the Cubs have done this year. But they have, you know, they're doing the best that they can. Fans are still having a really great experience, and as long as they continue to have the Cubs experience that they've come to love and only have it improved by having better facilities, you know, I think the Cubs are in really good position to have the ballpark be successful for another 114 years.
Do you agree that the Chicago Cubs, that they are perhaps one of the hottest brands in the U.S. right now?
Absolutely. I think you could argue they are the hottest brand in the U.S. right now. And the idea of, you know, everybody, you know, even if you didn't watch the game, everybody knew the Cubs story. Everybody was, you know, it's unfortunate for the Cleveland Indians, because if it weren't for the Chicago Cubs, then they would clearly be the talk of the country and the talk of what was happening, and probably would have gotten the support of most of the country, given the fact that they hadn't won a World Series in 68 years, but some of the heartbreaking stuff that has gone on when they got to the World Series. But the Cubs, again, the Cubs have a feel-good story. They have a really compelling narrative. They have stars. They have, you know, stars on the field, off the field. They have the venue itself as a star. They have the city, you know, the way that they represent the city of Chicago. You know, the actors who supported it, they sing, you know, whether it's Bill Murray or, you know, Will Ferrell as he, you know, portrays Harry Carey.
I mean, right.
The Cubs were already a large national brand. And a lot of that had to do with what happened. You know, the Cubs were one of the first teams to have a national television rights deal where, you know, they were broadcast throughout the entire country as early as the late 40s and early 50s. And the idea of them being a national team now is not that difficult to see, given the infrastructure they put in to make that happen. And, yeah, I mean, it's hard to think of a brand that has a better narrative now going, you know, inside or outside of sports. going at the end of 2016.
The CEO of Block 6 Analytics, Adam Grossman, is with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. We're going to shift gears now. I've been reading some of your recent posts and articles, and one of the things I wanted to examine, let's talk about, you know, it's been a very intense political season. I'm glad it is finally over. Both sides, very passionate. I tell you what, I'm dragging this week. I'm a little bit tired, Adam. Oh, my gosh. So, you know, tell us what your recent post was about, and athlete endorsements. How does, you know, I have to wonder this too. I mean, how does this affect an athlete's brand when you're endorsing a particular candidate, or does it?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question. I mean, I think this is not the first political activism. You know, one of the people we talk about is LeBron James in the article, and he's been more politically active than, you know, Michael Jordan famously said, you know, Republicans buy sneakers too, where LeBron, you know, he's very, to make it, he wanted to take as apolitical of a stand as possible, where LeBron James clearly has made political statements, and I don't think it's really, you know, you could say it helped or hurt his brand too much. But the certainly the tradition is for athletes to make limited political comments. And even when it's not just limited to athletes, you know, Bob Costas during a Sunday Night Football game tried to make a speech about gun control and gun violence. He was roundly criticized for saying, you know, why are you, this is not your area of expertise. Why are you talking about these issues? So, you know, I think, and more recently we were talking about Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, to a certain extent seem to have endorsed Trump, although that is very, it's not totally clear what that is.
Right.
Tom Brady's wife, Gisele Bündchen, vehemently denied that he was voting for Donald Trump, even though it seemed like he was. So, but the idea of, you know, athletes in general are very risk averse when it comes to making political endorsements. So I don't think we're necessarily going to see a lot of people, a lot of athletes continuing to do that. I think the athletes that will continue to make political statements are ones like LeBron James or Tom Brady, in terms of like saying we support a certain candidate. Now, what's been interesting in terms of what's come up, especially in terms of NFL ratings and them being down year over year, especially compared to 2015 and 2014, is the political statement being made by Colin Kaepernick, and how kneeling during the national anthem, and how a lot of football players have been talking about police violence and the racial and ethical and political implications of that. There is definitely something to be said that, you know, for some people that helps the brand, for some people that's hurt their brand. And it's definitely something to take a look at. You know, our personal, or my personal stance and the stance of the company is that, you know, expression of ideas is always a good thing, and being able to debate and discuss those ideas. But there is, you know, people are going to then react to those ideas, and understanding how people react is something that, you know, athletes and whoever is taking a political stand will have to think about. But in terms of the overall brand, you know, again, I think it depends on, you know, obviously, this is a kind of a cop-out answer, but it depends on the person, depends on the brand, depends on the issue. And, you know, when it comes to presidential endorsements, that really usually has very little impact on the athlete's overall brand.
Some see it as a positive, some see it as a negative. Quickly, as we wrap up our time, what did you share in some of your recent articles? And perhaps what's been some of the feedback that you've been receiving as well, Adam?
I think the most recent thing, and again, this is not to bring up the election again, but one of the things that people have said about the election is that data, you know, predictive analytics, data analysis is dead. How can people be so wrong, and how can the experts in politics be so wrong about what was going to happen during the presidential election? And that is definitely worthy of more analysis. But there are some things to consider. One is Secretary Clinton actually did receive more popular votes than President-elect Trump, and more overall votes, even though President-elect Trump won the Electoral College. And a lot of the models going into the election had Secretary Clinton up by about 3%, or the average was about 3%, and she's going to end up winning the popular vote by 1.5 to 2%. So in and of itself, that there's error there, but it's not as big of an error as people think. And the other more important issue, I think, is the way that data is actually collected when it comes to politics. In particular, pollsters have to use survey data in which they rely on people saying things rather than actions and behavior. And that's the big difference when it comes to survey data versus actual behavior and actual actions. You know, people can say things, and again, not, people are not necessarily lying. This is, you know, people say what they what they're going to do, and you can take them at their word for the most part. But, you know, there are going to be changes in what people say and what they actually do. In particular, in this election, there is an argument to be made that there was some response bias where more people said they were going to vote for Secretary Clinton when they actually, in reality, they ended up voting for Donald Trump, particularly in rural areas. And getting a representative sample and making sure, and, you know, only being reliant on what people say as opposed to actions caused problems and caused errors that happened in the election and the results. So, you know, I think the reaction is from a lot of people that we've gotten is you're in the data analytics business, mm-hmm. and yet here's a spectacular failure of data analytics. And what I would say is that this actually is a triumph, not a triumph, but it shows you the importance of getting good data, that you have to have the right data in order to do the right analysis. And in politics, it is almost impossible to get exactly the right data. And relying on survey data can lead to problems in strategic thinking and in predictive outcomes. And I think this is an example of that happening.
It was stunning, no doubt about it. Always a fascinating discussion with Adam Grossman, the CEO of Block 6 Analytics. Quickly tell all of our audience where they can go and check you out online.
Yeah, you can check us out at block6analytics.com. You can check us out on Facebook by searching for Block 6 Analytics, and on Twitter with Block, the number 6 Analytics as well.
And, of course, we look forward to the book in the spring. So all the best, and we look forward to talking to you again real soon. Thank you, Adam. Great way to kick off our program tonight.
Thank you, Alyssa.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way right here at the all-new SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show.
For all the times that you ran on my parade. And all the clubs you get.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker Campbell, welcome back inside the Quick and Loan Studios at the all new SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. As promised, it is time to hit the hardwood. We are going to highlight some of the major storylines in the NBA that are already emerging. And we are so delighted to have back with us from NBA TV. He is always a Big E favorite, Jared Greenberg. Good evening, Jared.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I appreciate you saying that.
Oh, we love having you. So let's start off our conversation. Let's head out to the Western Conference and talk about those baby Lakers. Because, Jared, they have been off to a terrific start, and they are truly, I think, they're one of the most exciting teams in the league this year. They snapped that three-game winning streak after their loss against the Mavericks on Tuesday night. So what have they shown you?
Well, you know, I think that they're just having fun playing basketball. You know, I think that maybe we thought it was cliche talk that Luke Walton's going to come in and, you know, bring the culture down from the Warriors, but it seems like it might be something really to it where, you know, I think the guys are kind of relieved. Byron Scott didn't mesh well with the young guys last year. Certainly the Kobe factor played a big role. It was a tough situation for the whole organization last year with Kobe, with the farewell tour, the incredible media attention, the scrutiny night in and night out. On top of the fact that Kobe was taking an incredible amount of shots when he was playing, and there wasn't ball movement, there wasn't fun playing basketball, and I think it stunted the growth to an extent of the young guys. And now Luke Walton has them moving the basketball. They're the fastest paced team in the NBA, and they went from the lowest scoring team in the NBA last year to one of the top five scoring teams in basketball right now. So I think, you know, I don't know that the Lakers all of a sudden are going to become this playoff team or serious contender in the West and stun us all, because I don't think this is sustainable. I think that even though they've played an incredibly tough schedule and beaten some really, really good teams, they're going to start to level out. But I think that the veterans they brought in, the qualities that Dang and Mozgov are bringing to the table as veterans and what they do, their skill set, I think complements these young guys really well. And D'Angelo Russell's having fun, and he's proving that he was worthy of a second overall pick.
You know, Jared, I think back to the end of last year, and there were so many questions about how the Los Angeles Lakers, you know, how they would rebuild after Kobe Bryant. What do you think has been the key to establishing a winning culture so quickly?
I just think, you know, Luke Walton came in, and he's relatable to these guys, younger, but he also brings to the table the experience of being on a championship team with the Warriors, getting back to the finals, the greatest regular season team ever last year. I think that the style that the Warriors played with is a style that most young NBA players want to play in, getting up and down the court, being trusted to take shots that you know you can take, not always looking over your shoulder, waiting for your coach to say, all right, you got the green light now. And then on top of it all, we can't forget about Luke Walton's ties to the Laker organization. Mm-hmm. You know, he goes way back on top of the fact that, you know, he was part of recent championships with that team. So he brings to the table a young dynamic of understanding the generation of players he's coaching while also having recent championship experience with the Warriors and then also knowing the history of the organization that he's in right now. And I think that it's kind of a breath of fresh air for these guys who were getting old school coaching from Byron Scott and it was nonstop every day. I remember training camp for the Lakers a couple of years ago, just running the guys into the ground, and that's just not how training camp works these days. And not that one way is right or wrong, and it can't still work for other teams, but when you're dealing with a young team and the results of their work being put in is constantly losing, they start to not understand why they're doing all of this. And I think Lou Walton came with a fresher style.
Well, and I think Lou Williams said it best about his new head coach, that he, Luke Walton, has a way of making players feel like they're his teammates, and you want to run through a wall for him.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think it's a big part of it. You know, they're having fun. You know, the simple thing that the Warriors started doing, they now do with the Lakers. They play music during practice. It sounds silly. It sounds like it's something that's
right,
not that important, but if guys are now having fun in practice because they're enjoying the atmosphere, they like the music, they like the vibe that's going on, that makes them perform better. I mean, you know, when you're happier at work, you're a better performer at work.
Right. Hey, NBA TV's Jared Greenberg is with us tonight at the all-new SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You can connect with us at Twitter at E-Radio Sports, or go back and listen to this entire interview at podcastarena.com. Were the Lakers, Jared, were they one of your surprise teams in the Western Conference coming into the 2016-2017 season?
No, not, to be honest, no. I mean, and again, you know, we're 3 weeks in, and I think even though they've beaten some really good teams, I think it levels out here, you know, just like some teams that jumped out to really good starts that I think will come back down to earth a bit. You know, it's a long season, and I don't expect the Lakers here to still make up the playoffs. I think that I didn't have them as the worst team in the West, but I certainly didn't have them as a team that's going to fight for a playoff spot. I think they're still going to be somewhere in that range of 10 to 12 or 13 in the West. I think that there's just so much talent, and there's so many other teams that have veterans that have been through it that understand they can pace themselves through 82 games.
What is your view of the Dallas Mavericks? Because I talked about the win against the Lakers on Tuesday night. They definitely needed this road win, but the play, the production of Harrison Barnes, it seems like he's really turned the corner because he did struggle in the preseason.
No doubt about it. I mean, there were questions that he was going to be the next Chandler Parsons that the Mavs brought in, where, you know, he was the not the main guy on the previous team, put up good numbers, and then all of a sudden you want him to become the superstar scorer, and he's not capable of doing that. And for Chandler, obviously, injuries were a big factor. But, you know, I think we didn't know what to expect from Harrison Barnes, and I think people looked at his contract and said, wow, how do you give the guy who was the fifth option on a team,
right,
you know, money to be the number one guy and just assume he can go from accepting a role of being number five to being number one? And I think that we are getting lost in the money these days. I think it's no longer fair to look at a guy's contract and expect certain production. It just doesn't equate that way anymore with the way the TV money has come in and changed the dynamic of the salary cap and what players' contracts are making. And eventually in a few years it's going to even out, but right now it doesn't make sense to compute it that way. And for a guy like Harrison Barnes, you know, we got to remember, going back to his high school days, you know, he was a dynamic player. He was one of the most highly recruited players by North Carolina. Went there, and maybe he let people down in terms of what their expectations are, but he certainly has the ability. Now, is he going to go out and score 30 points every night like it seems like he's been doing the last week? No, but I think that the big part of the Mavericks, and this is why I still have hope for them. I was disappointed by their slow start, but, you know, the Mavericks need to take advantage of this opportunity with Dirk out right now, because my big thing for them this year was there's only been, I think, 1 year, it was Monte Ellis a couple of years ago, that Dirk has not been the leading scorer on the Mavs. And this needed to be that next year for them, because while last year Dirk, in my mind, was an all-star, and I was stunned that he didn't make the all-star game, but if Dirk is the leading scorer again this year, then there's no chance the Mavs are making the playoffs. You can't ask him to do that again at his age, especially now with the Achilles problem he's having. They have enough capable guys to pick up the slack. They need to stay healthy, they need to stay on the court, and they need to find a way, and I think that's what Rick Carlisle is able to do. But between Barnes, Wesley Matthews, some of their younger guys that they've been able to bring in over the last couple of years, they need them to step up and really take the bulk of the offense away from Dirk and figure this out now over the next week or however long Dirk's going to be out. And once he gets back, now you add in that Hall of Fame mix, and you say, okay, let's figure this out. We're in a big hole here, but teams have been in bigger holes and still been able to find a way to the playoffs. So I don't think the season's over yet for the Mavs, but this is a big week for them to try and figure out their identity.
Okay, so can Harrison Barnes, do you hold the belief that he can be that main guy in Dallas? I mean, as you were talking about, I mean, 31 against the Lakers and 34 against the Bucks. I mean, he's obviously capable of posting big totals.
Yeah, I do. I mean, being the main guy, that are we talking about him scoring 30 points a night? No, I don't think that he could do that. But can he be the main guy with Wesley Matthews, you know, and Darren Williams and Devin Harris contributing double-digit points and you're asking Harrison Barnes to give you 20, 23 points tonight? Yeah, I think he is capable of doing that. There's no doubt about it.
Listen anytime, anywhere for your Android or iOS device. All of your favorite SB Nation shows live and on demand right from your smart device. You can search SB Nation Radio in the iOS or Google Play Store. And if you don't have an Android or iOS device, you can stream us on most smart devices at SBNationRadio.com. The conversation continues with NBA TV's Jared Greenberg as we're breaking down the Western Conference right here at SB Nation Radio.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back inside the Quicken Loans studios at the all-new SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. As a reminder, tonight, all of our guests are joining us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line, and we are so delighted to pick up our conversation with Jared Greenberg of NBA TV. So let's talk some OKC. They had the summer of disappointment, but they're off to their best start. Are you surprised?
Not surprised in the sense of, you know, they got the robot, the machine, the guy who we're not sure is a human being, Russell Westbrook.
I mean, right.
It's insane what he's able to
he's
do.
He's incredible. And,
you know, the big question that you know, the guys that I work with constantly are talking about is, you know, is it sustainable for him? You know, can you play this many minutes? Can you play this hard? Can you be the guy for 82 games and then still have something in the tank to the playoffs? And most people say no, but again, Russell Westbrook is different. He comes from a different cut than we've seen in a long time. And I think, you know, the numbers that we put up on NBA TV last night, we were talking about, and I think it was Zach Lowe from ESPN that really brought this up to everybody's attention, is you know how good Russell Westbrook is. We know how he has a hand in everything, whether it's scoring or assisting. But when Russell Westbrook comes off the floor, and the Thunder have to play, and it's not that often, but when the Thunder have to play without Westbrook for a stretch, they're actually a worse offensive team than the Philadelphia 76ers,
wow.
Which, you think about it, that's really not the category you want to be with, you know, and I think that they need to find ways to create offense, they need to find ways to get other guys involved. You know, I love the Victor Oladipo move to be with Durant and Westbrook. The Victor Oladipo move with Westbrook alone, I think, is to me a little head-scratching, because you get a guy like Victor Oladipo scoring 16 points a night on the Orlando Magic, and they're terrible. You think that 16 is going to turn into 20 on a good team? You know, guys on bad teams pile up numbers. And, you know, even guys on the Sixers the last couple of years have put up numbers. Victor Oladipo's 16 points on a bad team really is probably more like 14 points or 12 points on a good team. And now they're asking him to give him more. I think they're missing Cameron Payne. I think they need some more facilitators. They need guys who can move the ball around. Eventually, Steven Adams is going to be an all-star in this league. We know Enes Kanter can score, but Billy Donovan doesn't love to have him on the floor for extended stretches, especially with Adams, because he doesn't play defense. So I'm confused by this team. I think they make the playoffs. I think they're a middle-of-the-pack team. And I think Russell Westbrook wills them there. And, you know, he's going to be the front-runner for MVP. But how much has left in the tank after that? It's going to be interesting to watch.
Okay, only a few more minutes with Jared Greenberg from NBA TV tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Jared, reach out and connect with our audience. Where can they check you out online?
Well, you can check me out on Twitter, Jared S. Greenberg. Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat. Doing all that.
He's everywhere.
Stuff, trying to stay young, you know?
Absolutely. Okay, so let's head out to the Eastern Conference. And a team that certainly has surprised has been the Charlotte Hornets. Steve Clifford, obviously, he has done a fantastic job and has proven that, what, in the 3 years, he is a solid head NBA coach. How has he done it?
Defense. You know, that's his trademark. I debated with some analysts that I work with how much the Hornets lost. I felt that they lost a lot from their team this past summer and didn't add much. And then you look at the numbers and say, well, really, production-wise, did they really lose that much in Jeremy Lin? Did we overblow his stats? Did we make them more than it was? Is Courtney Lee that much of an impactful player for the Hornets. And you know, you bring back in Batum, who's another year older. You bring back in Marvin Williams, who had the best year of his life in a contract year. Maybe you know, that's circumstantial stats. Who knows? But then you look at what they're doing this year, and you took a guy who very easily could have won Most Improved Player of the Year last year in Kemba Walker, and his numbers are like far and away better than they were last year. And last year was better than anything he ever could have dreamed of putting up in his first few years in the league. Kemba Walker is a 20-point-a-night scorer, and he's way more efficient now, which was his problem early in his career. He could shoot a three efficiently. He's taking smart shots. He gets everybody involved. And that backcourt, Steve Clifford talked about this the other day, the backcourt of him and Batum now, there's just this trust factor, and they really understand how to play together. And I think that is something that, you know, maybe we overlooked heading into the season, but you know, their offense, I didn't think they'd have enough points to go around. They wouldn't have enough to be able to compete offensively, but maybe we didn't understand that their defense is really that good, and that's how they're able to beat teams.
Okay, so we highlight the Charlotte Hornets. Talk to me about what's going on with the Pacers.
Oh man, you know,
that's a surprise.
It would take a while for them to gel here, just because they had so many new pieces and a new head coach. But you know, I Paul George was my pick for MVP this year. You know, based on what I saw from him in the summer, I thought that he was going to have just an absolute monster year. You know, not only is he struggling, he's already talking about how frustrating it is that guys aren't playing the way they're supposed to be playing. Jeff Teague has not been good at all. I mean, the Atlanta Hawks look like a genius right now. Schroeder looks like a stud compared to what Teague has been giving them. I think eventually Indiana's got too much talent not to be competitive and dig out of this hole that they're in. But man, you know, we were talking about it with Dallas. Can't go too much longer with digging this hole before you start to figure it out.
Okay, so my final question for you is: who in the Eastern Conference is going to be the biggest threat to the Cleveland Cavaliers to winning the championship?
Well, before the season, you know, in terms of like matchups specifically with Cleveland, I would have said Indiana. But right now, obviously, I don't feel that way. And my knee jerk reaction now is to say Atlanta. Now, here's the thing. Like, I don't think Atlanta is the second best team in the East, but I think Atlanta did something that we overlooked in the summer. They built their team to take on Cleveland. You know, Cleveland had eliminated the Hawks the last 2 years, and they did it by dominating the boards, and they did it by just taking advantage of a lack of interior presence that the Hawks had, or I should say didn't have. So now the Hawks come in, they bring in Dwight Howard, who, say what you want to say about him, but he still can protect the rim, he still can rebound. He held Tristan Thompson to two rebounds and no points the other night.
Wow.
And then Dennis Schroeder, who takes over for Jeff Teague. Dennis Schroeder, you know, he has no conscience whatsoever. He went head-to-head with Kyrie Irving and scored 28 points. So I think that what they did was they addressed what it takes to beat Cleveland. Now, can Atlanta get past Toronto, Boston, if they can dig out of this hole here and turn things around? You know, are they better than Indiana once they figure it out? I don't know. But I know that Atlanta is going to continue to give Cleveland some trouble.
Oh, we love him. He knows his stuff. Jared Greenberg of NBA TV. He's been back with us. Thanks so much. We appreciate your time, Jared.
Oh, you got it. Anytime.
Stick around. Much more coming your way right here in hour number two at the all-new SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details. Because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose. By people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.